tuning into our new podcast. We're going to be starting this up. We're going to be sharing some hunting, fishing stories. We're going to try and get some educational value out of it as well. You know, share our mistakes and what we've learned from it. So we're going to be going with it. We're going to call it Two Guides, One Truck. And to start off some introductions, I'm Anthony Thibodeau. I'm a registered Maine guide. I enjoy doing the hunting, fishing, the recreation, and all of that. This is Jason over here. He's my brother. Both of us own Thibodeau Outdoor Adventures. And it's a registered Maine guide company that, again, we do some hunting, fishing, recreation out of. So the first thing that I wanted to do is share a nice little story about how we kind of got into the hunting, fishing, guiding, and all that. And this was quite a while back. We're looking probably a decade and a half ago now. We decided to go up to the big woods and go hunting, deer hunting one day. Jason had already, he had already gotten his tag filled that year. He had gotten a nice buck that year, so it was just left on me. So we went up, we were trying to do a little bit of tracking, which was all right at the time. There was just a little bit of snow, a little crust on it, so it was hard to tell if it was a fresh track or if it had been there for a day or two. So we were driving along and we catch this good, fresh, it was probably what, a 1-2 year grow? Because they had just planted some trees and they were about...
Yeah, it's maybe 4 years or so, but you could still see over the tops and everything.
Right, yeah. And so we find this fresh grow and we make our way up, and we could see from the road that there was a nice break in it where there was an old path. So Jay leads us up, and we were kind of doing a combination. We were doing some partridge, because all these seasons lined up for us. There was partridge, there was rabbit hunting, so Jay had his shotgun. And like I said, he had already tagged out for that year, so on deer. So I'm heading up, I take the lead, Jay's walking up beside me. We're going through this growth, and we finally make it up to this top. And it was this perfect hardwood seam, and we had just gotten through this softwood into this hardwood seam. And we see it's Rub City. I mean, almost every tree that you could see had some form of rub on it. And we walk over and we find this excellent scrape with a licking branch on it. And Jay looks at me and he's like, hey, we're going to walk up here and we're going to sit in this and I'm going to do a little scent. So he hangs up this little drip scent right next to that little scrape. And we walk up into this perfect shooting lane. So we get up there, I sit in front, Jay sits behind me, and we wait about 10, 15 minutes, and then Jay gives a couple good grunts. We wait a little bit longer, and this probably, I don't know, maybe another 10, 15 minutes. It felt like, you know, 2 seconds looking back on it. So he gives another grunt, and then we just hear this massive thrashing through the woods. So we're hearing this thrashing and I'm getting all excited. I'm like, oh, this is something good coming. And Jay's sitting probably 10, 15 feet behind me. So I get everything ready. And then this massive, it looked jet black, just beast of an animal starts coming through. And we look at each other and we're like, oh, it's a moose. Because we, you know, we saw all sorts of moose tracks coming through here. And I mean, it was almost jet black looking at it from a distance. And so it comes into our line of sight. And at this point, I was convinced it was a moose. So I had pulled up my phone. I was like, I'm going to snap a picture of this thing. You know, at least I'll get a picture out of this day. So I have my phone in my hand. My gun's laid across my lap. And I'm getting all zoomed in. And it looks over, and I couldn't tell you how many points this thing was. From memory, it was probably 100 points.
Right. Memory always serves you that way. Yeah.
So all I see is this monster of a buck standing in front of me. So I drop my phone, and it's staring right at me. And I'm slowly trying to reach down and grab my gun. And again, like, you know, when you my early 20s. So, you know, I was excited. This was like the first monster buck that's in front of me. Buck fever times 110. And so I'm grabbing this thing and I'm shaking on the way up and I'm like, oh man. And I'm trying not to get this thing to see me, but it's looking right at me.
Yeah. We were made. It was done.
Yeah, so I am halfway up and Jason from behind goes, shoot it, shoot it. And I'm like, I'm trying to. So just as soon as I get my gun up, and I wasn't even within a mile of being able to shoot this thing, it blows at us and it just takes off bolting out of there.
Yep.
And
branches breaking. Yeah. Like nothing was stopping it.
It was going to town. Said, I don't know what that was, but I'm out of here. So we get up and we're like, all right, well, we're going to try and go after this and we're going to try and track it. And I mean, I'm sure that thing was long gone by the time we even made it down to the tracks. So we get down there and in the snow, the track it left where it was standing, not running, was bigger than my hand. And, you know, I couldn't even begin to estimate what this deer went.
So as far as on the hoof, I like to think I'm pretty good at estimation. Pretty good, you know, not exact.
Right.
But when I say that this was the biggest deer that I've ever seen in my life, and it's easy to say when it's not in the bed of the truck, you know. Right. But I would say that it had to be well over 250, you know. It was just a monster deer. And I don't remember the points on it, but the beams on the antlers were just stupid fat. It looked almost ridiculous for the deer's head, you know.
Mm. And it was one of those nice, like, straight out with every tine going straight up type of rack. And it was gorgeous. It was an absolutely
he was
gorgeous.
Big buck. He'd been around though. So as soon as he made us, he was gone. He was in the next county.
Yeah, he got that big for a reason.
Yeah.
So we get on these tracks and we're following them and we find this absolute perfect area. I mean, there were oak trees with acorns, there were like little boughs that he'd been chewing on. I mean, you name it. And he had it there. So that was our go-to area for trying to get a big buck for probably the next, what, 2 or 3 years?
Yeah. But everything's kind of cyclical. And at that point that we stopped hitting that, the new growth had come up quite a bit in the softwoods, you know, and we stopped seeing deer sign in there. Whether it's they just got pushed out of there by us and other people, or they just moved on, you know, maybe someone had taken him.
Oh, absolutely. And that's always a possibility, too. You know, and I don't want to say it's a widely known public area, but it you know, it was a paper company land, so, you know, people just go up and hunt it. And, you know, I've seen some pretty big bucks come out of that area, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, as I'm driving along, it's being tossed in the bed of somebody's truck.
Yep.
So, again, that's one of those things that a good learning experience from that was we were able to really get a good understanding of, hey, you know, once you find these scrapes and these rubs, you're going to potentially get into this territorial area. And a good buck call really does work in that situation. And I've continued on and seen that. You know, the proof is in the product over time, because how many times have we now done it that we found these areas, done a buck call, done a bleat, and, you know, something has come in, you know, whether or not we've gotten it, something's come in.
Right. It's not always a monster that comes rolling in. You know, is it more often than not you're looking at a 1-year-old buck just kind of poking in for curiosity's sake?
And, you know, it still works, and, you know, it depends on the area. You never know what you're going to have in that area until you actually see it. And when you when you get it to come in, well, now you know it's a spike horn. Or, right. For example, you know, my buck last year, it was a four-pointer.
Right.
But I also knew in that area I had that that eight basket, the six-pointer. I had that crotch horn. I had that spike horn. I had that four-pointer. I had another six-pointer.
Right.
And yeah. They were all on camera, so who knew what was walking through at that time?
Right.
And,
could have been anything.
Oh, absolutely. Turned out it was a four-pointer.
Yeah.
But, back on to what I really learned from that situation is always be ready. You know, have yourself in a position, and even though it's not, it might not be what you want, you're still in the position to harvest that animal.
Right. The decision is on you. It's not on the circumstance.
Correct. And, you know, you never know, because, I mean, he came in and he looked right at us. And another thing that I learned from it is probably get yourself blended in. You know, I mean, I was sitting right on a stump.
Yeah.
You know, hindsight being 2020.
We weren't really kind of part of the environment there, you know.
No. So, why don't you tell me your perspective on that?
Okay, so that was, I had been a few years into really, really observing topography and where the deer prefer to be, you know, doing a lot of research on that. And I'd had really good luck at that point with using that to the advantage. So I had been up there bird hunting earlier on in the season, and I remember I kind of scooted past this little area on a, to say that it was a logging road is very, very generous, you know. It was like smack in the window, mirrors off the truck as you drive down, but I could see this ridge overlooking, and I could see that it was all hardwood up at the top of the ridge. Excuse me. So I check some maps, and I go, this is an awesome place for a deer. And Tony and I had planned on going up and hunting, so I kind of reserved that for when we went up. Excuse me again, sorry, getting over a cold right now. So I had gotten my buck down behind where I live earlier that year, but we still went up, still wanted to check this place out. We get up there, like he was saying, all kinds of sign, and when we make it up to this convergence of old tote roads up at the top, we find that there's a signpost route right there, right at the top. So I'm thinking, this is it, you know, in the way that everything was rubbed and the ground was scraped up and, you know, licking branches galore, it was perfect. We get up there, like you said, I don't want to recount the whole story, but do a couple of grunts. A few minutes later, this thing's coming in like a train, just right on rails, and definitely territorial, you know. The coloration was off. He was a dark, dark buck, you know. It was weird, but you get some of those sometimes, they're dark.
Mm. And, you know, another thing that we've come to learn is that different, I don't want to call it a different species, but, you know, I'm at a loss for words.
The subspecies.
Yeah, the subspecies thing, yeah. Which, there's a line in the state that kind of has two different subspecies. So, you are looking at a darker deer.
Bigger body, most often. But he was right in on rails, and was less than ideal, I'll say, our placement.
Yeah.
You know, but we also, it was one of those that we were learning, so we didn't expect everything to work out exactly the way that it did, or the way that we wanted it to. You know, we'd had a lot of disappointment up until that point, but it just worked, and I guess the big thing that it solidified for me was land features. Absolutely. You know, you're looking for the topography. You're looking for the line that separates your evergreens and your hardwoods
Yeah, you know, kind of like what we did.
Exactly. And,
you know, the learning experience from that is the best part of the story in my mind, because I would have loved to have gotten that. Like, and it's still in my mind that, oh, I should have gotten that. But the amount of information that I learned from that situation and that experience is, you know, it's, you can't learn that unless you're in that situation, or I don't feel that you can.
Right.
Because, you know, it really sticks it in your mind, because you have that failure to go with it.
Yeah, and failure is the best teacher. It really is. Success, yeah, you know that you did it, but why did it turn out the way that it did? And you may never know, you know. But with failure, you know the instant that you screwed it up. The instant.
Yeah, and that was when, you know, I had my phone in my hand and not a rifle.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but, you know, all in all, it was a good time. It was, you know, a great learning experience.
It was a blast.
You know, it really got me set on the going up, getting onto that track, going after these, you know, potentially, you know, big bucks. And, you know, like we said earlier, you never know until you get there. You can try and judge by the track that it's huge, but
some deer just have big feet.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just like humans. You know,
some people have small.
Yeah, and but more often than not, you're gonna stumble across a bigger bodied, bigger racked deer in these less populated, less hunted areas. You know, they just have more time to grow.
Right.
And there's more competing wildlife, you know, right in that same spot. And again, there is no confirmed mountain lions in Maine. However, you know, people have them on cameras, people have seen them,
yeah.
But
there's no reproducing population.
Yeah, yes, there's no reproducing population. But where we were closer to Canada that has a reproducing population. So in that same spot, this was not the same hunt, but, you know, 2 or 3 years later,
yes.
we were heading up, and we found mountain lion tracks right in that area. So, you know, where I'm going with this is you have competing animals for not only territory, but they're going after these deer. So just their natural instinct is to become a bigger, you know, the smaller ones either get weeded out by getting eaten by bobcat, lynx, yep. Mountain lion, bear. They die off over the winter, or they become a bigger, larger antlered buck.
Right. Yeah, the natural predation and the harsh winters and everything, it really makes it so that the strongest and the biggest thrive, and anything less than that is just thinned out pretty quickly.
Yeah, and which is pretty good when you go up there and, you know, you can see all these different species too. And that's what I like about hunting some of these areas, is you go up and you're not just seeing deer. You know, you go into the farm territory and, yeah, you see a deer or some turkey.
You know,
but
a lot of farms, they grow some big deer. And I'm not talking about deer farms, but
right.
Agricultural fields help them get the calories they need to be very large animals.
Oh, absolutely. Where I was going with that was the diversity of the what you're seeing.
Right.
You know,
right.
How many times have we gone up here on a hunt and seen who knows what we're going to see? You know, bear running beside us while we're bird hunting.
Yep.
You know, well, the lynx that was just staring at us in the middle of the road.
Yep.
Yeah, that is just what makes it so much better.
Yep.
But anyway, thank you for, you know, tuning in, listening. We appreciate you listening to our stories, and hopefully our story is going to give you a little bit of a learning experience of your own, and you can take what we've given from our information and our failures.
Yes,
and
learn from our failures.
Yeah, learn from our failures, and go have yourself a successful hunt.